is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Victor Davis Hanson, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, in conversation most recently with the Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. And in the course of their explication of many concerns for here in the 21st century, they spoke very well of Dwight David Eisenhower's farewell speech, January 1961, within 3 days of the inauguration of John F. Kennedy to be the President of the United States. Eisenhower addressed the radio and TV audience very formally, read his speech. This is known as the Eisenhower farewell address. It's also known as the military industrial complex warning. But there's more in the speech than that, which Senator Johnson and Victor brought to my attention. So I welcome Victor to thank him for reminding me to listen to that speech now in my seniority. I listened to it when I was perhaps in my 40s, and I heard it very differently. Do you hear it differently now, Victor, how Eisenhower warned us about the future? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Yeah, I do. I don't think the last 20 years all of us paid much attention to it. We just thought, well, we're in a different age than he was, but it was very prescient across time and space. And that, you know, he gave a lot of those speeches about not just the military-industrial complex, but massive wasteful military spending, and of course deficits. He was very worried about deficits, and here we are at $36 trillion with $1 trillion in interest a year. So he looks better every year, to tell you the truth, as a pragmatic guy born in Texas, raised in Abilene, Kansas. So yeah, I think he's got a lot to say to this generation.
He lived several lives, good heavens. He thanked the Senate for one of their members introducing him to West Point when he was a cadet. But I was particularly taken by his humility as he talked about the future. He said that he was disappointed he couldn't deliver to us a lasting peace. But there were other warnings that you and Senator Johnson brought forth and I can now concentrate on in my seniority. One of the warnings was about the scientific elite. What was he talking about then, Victor, and what do we make of it now?
Well, I think that was during the massive spending in fear of the Soviet Union, where we were lavishing billions of dollars on universities for research programs and the PhD suddenly, it increased by a tenfold, the issuance of PhDs. And so it was the sort of Robert McNamara type of technocrat that was coming out of the corporation, the business, that was supposedly an expert in scientific analysis, but without a lot of common sense or practicality or being audited or checked by elected officials. And he thought that these were kind of an organic bureaucracy that was going to grow and grow, and they would fool us, the public, with their sort of fake vocabulary or therapeutic phraseology that supposedly showed a sense of expertise that was not warranted. And when you look back at that speech, and then you look at a James Clapper or John Brennan or an Anthony Fauci, James Comey, you can see what he was warning about.
Yes, what I took especially to heart, and you and Senator Johnson touched on it, is how we were poorly led during the pandemic, are still being poorly led about the pandemic, because we don't have the answer yet to its origins. There's lots of speculation. There's more and more evidence pointing in one direction, but there's no clarity. And I believe now, listening to the speech again, President Eisenhower could see that we were going to cede too much authority to people who said they know better for us. Is there another model we could have used during the pandemic? I'm searching around, because it's going to happen again. We know that. Lessons learned here.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, as somebody who works at Stanford, it was very ironic that the four people nationwide who had some of the best recommendations were both at Stanford and severely criticized by Stanford and censored. But Jay Bhattacharya and Scott Atlas and John Ioannidis and Michael Levitt, they all envisioned a system in which the most vulnerable, those would be people with comorbidities or 60 to 80, would be you wouldn't go near them during the peak of the epidemic in a rest home, or you would seclude them. And we know what happened in New York when you didn't do that. But for everybody else, it was essential that we get the economy moving and we have an open mind about treatments. And gradually you develop, hopefully, some type of natural immunity. And you have to be a little skeptical about new age or new technologies of inoculating the entire country before you know, for example, a lot about the mRNA vaccines. And so I think when you look back at the economic damage, spousal abuse, familial abuse, suicides, drug use, missed cancer screenings, all of those things that happen as a result of this lockdown, and then the absolute inability to look at a lot of over-the-counter uses of everything from Singulair to Pepcid to antihistamines to ivermectin, all of which we know now had some utility, rather than just say that anybody who mentions these alternative treatments was an idiot or quack. It was very scary. And then, of course, the inconsistencies, both by the officials who, Gavin Newsom here in California, going to the French Laundry without a mask with lobbyists, why he almost made it a criminal offense to do so for anyone else. But more importantly, the complete inability or desire to even discuss the origins of the lab or the culpability of the Chinese or the idea that this was likely a manufactured virus. And then when you look back at what Fauci and others did to suppress free debate, Peter Daszak, Echo Health, it's just amazing that we turned over so much power to them, and they were really running like monarchs or autocrats for about a year and a half.
I remember Gavin Newsom's decision one weekend, we watched it, to have a bulldozer cover sand over what
I remember that, yes.
What was a place for young people to skateboard and down by the beach. The least likely person ever to be bothered by COVID-19 was a person who can handle a skateboard on a very difficult track that they covered over. It was crazy, Victor. I don't know that Gavin Newsom has ever reflected on his own hysteria for giving that order.
No, he hasn't. He appeared, if you remember, down the Super Bowl without a mask. It was not only the severity and insanity of these edicts he did without consultation, but it was the hypocrisy. And then, of course, he said famously that the lockdown and the severe quarantine gave us an opportunity, quote, to have a more progressive capitalism. So you got the impression that the people who were issuing these edicts not only claimed they were doing it for public health reasons, but they saw them as crises, to paraphrase Rahm Emanuel, that are serious crises should never let go to waste. And so we did a lot of things that we're not even aware of. In 9 or 10 swing states, we went from 30% of the ballots, so-called absentee, to this new word, mail-in ballot, which was 70% in Michigan and Georgia and California. I think it's 85%. And yet the rate of rejection fell by a magnitude from, say, 4 or 5 in most states percent down to 0.3 or 0.4. So we were just changing radically, John, in the space of 2020. In a few months, the very way that we had voted for decades, if not over a century, and nobody really knew anything about it. And the next thing we knew, we found that a lot of people, there was not the same level or ability to authenticate ballots when you just have drop boxes and are Mark Zuckerberg infusing $420 million to absorb the work of some of the registrars. So that quarantine had a lot of ripples of damage we're still not assessing.
I tell one anecdote of myself. In that one of those first weekends, I was working in the forest, and I put a pickaxe in my ankle. Very stupid thing to do. I needed a tetanus shot. Victor, it was very close whether I could get one or not. They were only testing people, and they made me go through several hoops to just get inside to two nurses who were very kind. They were completely wrapped up in space suits, fear of the virus. It was panic time everywhere, and I was just one person needing a tetanus shot. Imagine that times 300 million across America. The people who shut us down took into no consideration that we were healthy people and needed to have hospital services. And yeah, do you see anything today taking that back, admitting that they were grotesquely out of order?
No, we know that on both a national and personal. I wasn't able to see a physician for 2.5 years. And then when I did, I had some abnormal tests. So I think everybody did. And it was just a complete paranoia. And unfortunately, the people with PhDs and MDs were part of the problem. They were very intolerant of any colleague who offered, the Swedish model. And we now know from just recent studies that Sweden suffered no higher death rate than its other European neighbors, but it mitigated all of the economic damages, and its economy grew. It didn't decline, and in terms of overall death rate, it was actually better than most Europeans from all causes. And so, I don't know. I think the media was quite responsible. They saw political advantage because most of them were anti-Trump, and they felt that December booming economy and closed border was what people wanted. And of course, when we went into the full COVID in 2020, I think there were political motivations to shut down things.
Victor and I are discussing Eisenhower's farewell address in January of 1961 and how his crystal ball is still working for us. When we come back, we're going to talk about one more warning President Eisenhower gave us about people driven to fear. Why? This is CBS Eye on the World with Victor Davis Hanson of the Hoover Institution. I'm John Batchelor.